Teaching Journey podcast acknowledges the traditional custodian of the country and pay our respects to the elders past and emerging, and recognizes their continuing connections to the land, waterways, and community. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land. Hi all, I'm Dee, your host, and you are listening to Teaching Journey Podcast, Connecting Through Early Education, episode 22. I sat down with Leanne Kapitanowski, who had worked in the sector for 33 years. She had worn many hats and have taken on many leadership roles, from being a centre director to a preschool field officer, and she has given so many advice in this chat. We spoke about many things, and particularly in depth about change and how she navigated when change happens. She said, "I don't like change, but I am open to listening," and shared some thought processes that she considers when she is reflecting of the change and the priority to the children on the impact of change that it can bring. I would suggest on writing them down when you listen to them and use them as guided prompts in your critical reflection. You don't need to be an early child long enough to realize that change is a constant element in our sector. And yes, we prioritize consistency and predictability for our young children, but change is so crucial when we move forward in our work in reform of education. But we know change is so very difficult. Not only it disrupts the comfort, but it can also surface fear and anxiety for some people. And I think what Leanne said about how change in our practices is not personal. It is for the children and families, and looking at the bigger picture can help in shifting the mindset. Utilizing our curriculum framework, your Early Years Learning Framework Version 2, Victorian Early Years Learning and Development Framework, National Quality Standards, and even the Convention on the Rights of the Child, as well as your professional teaching standards, in your critical reflection would help in shifting the priorities in how we navigate change as a whole. And perhaps thinking about how you would support your children to navigate change. What would you say to them? What would you do to support them through the change? What strategies could you guide them with and in navigating those changes? And then apply them to yourself and talk to someone about those feelings of discomfort. And you'll soon hear from Leanne on how she processes those feelings when change happens and how she communicates effectively with her team that she needs lots of warning and time to reflect on the changes that's going to be made. So here it is, episode 22 with Leanne Kapitanowski. Enjoy. A big welcome to Leanne Kapitanowski to the Teaching Journey podcast. So great to have you here. We've had a quick chat before this recording, and I'm so excited because you've got a wealth of knowledge and experience in the sector. But let's start and kick things right off. Could you start with introducing yourself to our listeners and share a little bit about yourself, but also share, you know, how long you've been in the sector for?
Hi. So, well, I've been in the sector for a very long time. It feels like forever. It's been 33 years since I did my first lot of qualifications, and I've been working in all different fields within the early childhood education and care sector for all that time since then. I come from a background of being raised up in a normal family in a suburb of Melbourne. All the normal things that you might experience from there. I was I feel very old because I went to a tech school, what's known as a technical school. So I was able to really look at those areas that I was really interested in, all the crafts and all that sort of stuff, which was a really good standing and a way of getting into working in early childhood. So, yeah, I'm happy now and working and yeah.
Yeah. And so how many years ago, how many moons ago was it when you started in the early years?
33 years.
33 years.
Oh, really old when I say that. So I, you know, fresh out of college, and back then I did my associate diploma of social science in childcare. So I was actually a preschool mothercraft nurse starting off with. And for the first 10 years, I was actually working as a diploma qualified, what was then known then, running a kindergarten room at that time. And about 6 years in, I thought, actually, I really want to be a kindergarten teacher, and I really want to work in that space. So I started doing my bachelor offline at University of Melbourne, actually. And in 2001, I qualified as a kindergarten teacher, and I was able to start working just solely in kindergarten. But during that time, I've been a director of childcare. I've worked as a preschool field officer. I've been able to spend some time doing some policy writing. I've done all sorts of different things throughout the time that I've been doing. I've worked a lot in childcare, so I was working in long day care as a kindergarten teacher there, and then over the last 12 years, I've been in a sessional kindergarten, so that's been really fun as well.
Yeah, and you're currently teaching at the moment.
I am currently teaching, yes. I was just saying to Dee just before we started, first day of having my 3-year-old group all together just for a few hours, and it was chaos. So we've got lots of thinking afterwards about how we might support this group moving forward, because they're an interesting group of children.
Yeah, and I love how you've been in the sector for 33 years. You have worn many, many hats. And yet, like, talking about your first day with the children back, with the 3-year-olds today, and it can feel really overwhelmed sometimes, doesn't it,
It
as a
can
teacher?
be, yeah. And we feel like some of these children are what people are calling COVID babies. So they've really only been with their families. They haven't really experienced any other sort of care before. So at least half the group sits in that space. And so they've walked into a place and they've never seen anything like this before. They don't know us from a bar of soap, and they cry. So it's been an interesting morning for us for sure. But I do work full time, so I actually teach the 4-year-old group as well. And that's been beautiful. We've actually gone to 30 children this year, so it's a big group. And they've settled so quickly, and it's just week one. So we're really excited about that, and we hope that it won't take too long for the 3-year-olds to settle also.
And I know this is a little bit off tangent, but maybe for, I guess, our beginner teachers who just got into the sector and, they've got a new group of 3-year-olds, like what you've described today. What do you think, or what advice can you give to a new teacher on navigating that themselves and also prioritizing for
Yeah.
the children?
Take a breath. And
It's so
that's one of
simple,
the
but
first
so
things I
deep.
do. I've been really fortunate to have a co-teacher start with me this year who only qualified last year. So she's certainly sitting in that space. And it's so overwhelming. And you do feel really overwhelmed. And I can only hope that most of those beginning teachers have got someone who has got some experience or has worked in the sector before, so that they can be a really good support for them. But I always say take a breath, and I can remember going to a cluster meeting in our local government area last year, and I was sitting at a table with some teachers working in all different kinds of kindergartens and long day care in the area that I work in. And there's this poor girl, and she's like, "Oh, I've got to do this, and I've got to," and she's rattling on, and I said, "Whoa, take a breath." And it was weeks. She was talking about Harmony Week, that's an example, but by the time we were meeting, it was May, and she was still stressing about Harmony Week that was in March and how she was going to commemorate Harmony Week. And I said, "Hang on a sec, take a deep breath, think about what you need for that particular time with the children, what's important, and then start to implement those things. You don't have to do it all." And that's really a really big note that I talk to lots of educators around. I do lots of mentoring of pre-service teachers. And the conversation is always about take a deep breath, work out what you need for those children that you're working with on that particular day, get through the day and go, "Great, we got through the day. Now let's see what's going to happen the next time we meet." And so a lot of beginning teachers may not necessarily get the support that they need, and that it's so disappointing that that seems to happen for a lot of people. But if you can find someone that you work with that can give you the support that you're looking for, by all means, take it with both hands and get that mentor helping
And
you.
also embracing the, I wouldn't say failure, because failure is like completely, the worst case scenario. It's not the worst case scenario. The children are still dead. It maybe might not, or it could not be something that you've envisioned the day to turn out. That Harmony Day might not be exactly what she's envisioned. But It's about reflecting that and kind of go, oh, okay, what I did really well and what is it that didn't work out really well? What it is that I can improve? And how many day happens every single year? And we can do it all over again next year as
That's
well.
right. That's right.
And
And
so I
working out
guess,
what's important for the community that they're working with as well.
definitely. And so looking back 33 years ago and now, and I love that you're still teaching now. What are the, I guess, the differences in terms of your teaching identity?
Oh, look, there's so many. I know that back then time management was a huge look, time management's still probably not as great as it could be, but time management back then, and I just could never get on top of things. And I had to really work hard to think about what it was that I needed to do that day that would make me ready for the next day or for the rest of the week, what I could put off, how I could delegate to others, because I'd like to think that I need to do everything. And it's really important that you do try and delegate to others around you. I know that I spent a lot of time watching the people that I was working with and really trying to learn from them. I think I'm fortunate that whilst I'm a bit of an introvert, when I get into that space of working within early childhood, I become the expert because I know that I've got the knowledge, I know that I've got the experience, and I've been working really hard over my 33 years to be as experienced and knowledgeable as I can so that I can support others, and I can put families at ease if I need to. I can work with new educators, all that sort of stuff. But it's taken a long time to get to that space. A long time.
And you talk a lot about building that confidence as well. And
100%.
obviously that takes time, but what were the steps and measures that you have put in place to build on that knowledge and to build that confidence in you?
Lots of research. So I attend lots of professional development sessions. Even now, I mean, there's an expectation that we still have to do training because things change, things evolve. And the only way that you're going to learn is to actually go and do the learning yourself. Sometimes I walk away from some professional development I've done and said, yeah, I already knew all of that. But I took this and this out of that particular time that I was listening to that person talk that I perhaps had forgotten about or hadn't done before. I backed myself, and I think that's probably been the big thing. I know my stuff, I know I feel confident in it, and therefore I back myself to go, I might butt heads, but I will get there in the end. And I will keep working to support those people around me and to always have those people supported around me, my team, people, people wider in the area that I might work in, giving them as much support as I can. So,
And working alongside with different personality, different teaching styles, and you've been in the sector for very long, you're working in a space and there's, I guess, a different alignment, misalignment with the teaching style. How do you navigate through those periods of time?
I try and have open conversations if I can. I'm really fortunate that I'm working in a bilingual program at the moment, and that was something very new for me. This is year three of having a bilingual teacher that working alongside me, and that was a really big learning curve and understanding how it was that we would incorporate another language into the program and how that teacher would teach her program alongside mine. So that's been a big change for me, I suppose. It's really important for me at the very beginning to find out what people's cultures are, what their backgrounds are, what they consider to be important, what they would like to see their children learning and understanding, and how we can increase their all children's areas of development. And the more discussion that I can have with them at the beginning of the year, the easier it makes for us, and the less miscommunication that there is. That's not to say that there's never miscommunication, because there is definitely. But certainly, the more you get to know someone as quickly as possible, then the easier it's going to be with sorting out what our teaching styles are and how they might complement each other, or how we might have to make some adjustments so that we fit together and we work together as a team. So,
And I guess for someone who is new, like we said, a beginning teacher, building on that confidence can be a challenge. Having those difficult conversations can be a challenge as well. It can be quite overwhelming. Do you remember feeling, That sense of, like, I guess a lot of people would feel like the anxiety and that, heart rate goes up, hands start to get sweaty.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely, definitely. And it's I find that sometimes you can become defensive straight away. And that's really hard to change that mindset. Even today, that's really hard to change the mindset. Taking that deep breath and going, hang on, okay, what is it that they're trying to say to me? Is it helping me or is it making me feel perhaps uncomfortable and I need to explore this further with the person that I'm working with? I feel like I have difficult conversations every day, and it can be the tiniest little things that have happened, or it can be something really major where we've got to sit down and go, okay, we need to sort this out because we need to be able to work together. So what can we do to make it easier for all of us in our team to work cohesively? Yes, it makes you feel uncomfortable. Yes, it makes your heart race, your hands go sweaty. What have I done wrong? I don't like to wait. So if something like that happens, I'd like to address it straight away so we can get it. Okay, let's get out in the open. Let's sort out the problem. Okay, I didn't mean anything by it, but okay, I understand. Let's move on and really work to try and solve whatever the issue might be. Yeah.
Yeah, most definitely. Really good advice. Yeah, it's definitely not easy, and it gets better as you practice. And
Definitely.
the best way to look at it is at least you try. Try, even though it might not be the conversation, or the outcome might not look as how you would imagine. But it's about having that first open conversation with the person. You talk a little bit about change. How do you navigate change, and has it always been very easy for you? Because we do a lot of, there's a lot of changes within our sector. And how do you navigate all of that?
I hate change. I like to have some pre-warning if
Yeah.
something's going to change so I can prepare myself and be
Yeah.
ready for when the change might actually occur. And I'm the first to admit that I resist. Oh, really? Do we really need to change? And so I don't have to resist for very long until I realize it's of benefit for us, I suppose, in the long run. But I'm not, I don't like it. And so I try really hard to keep things the same if I can. However, I'm also open to listening, and that's probably the important thing. Why is it we need to make this change? Is it going to be of benefit to us and to the children we're working with? Is it something that's going to be positive or negative? What is it that we can do so that we can navigate the change together?
Yeah,
And
most definitely.
generally, once we've gone through those steps, we go, okay, we need to change. And then we start to go through that process of changing whatever it is that needs to
Yeah.
happen.
And what you've highlighted is those thought processes that kind of go, I need to put myself at the side and really look at the bigger picture. Look at, who is this for, this change for? Is it for the children? Is it going to benefit the families? Is it going to, benefit the whole classroom and my colleagues and the whole organization? It's really not about yourself.
No.
Really thinking about the bigger picture, isn't it?
I think you need to be really careful that you don't take things personally, and that
Yeah.
sometimes is what I do. I know for certain that I can be in that space. I think too with change, even today, we got to the end of session and we said, right, what do we need to do? We're going to have to change some stuff. And the three of us sat there and sort of stared at the wall for 10 minutes. Okay, what's going to work next time that these children come together? And we know that we have to make some changes, make it a positive space both for the children and for us, and to make it easier for all of us as well. So that they're little changes that need to happen, but for some people they're big. And one of my co-educators said, oh, but I need my routine. We can't do that. I need to do things in certain steps. Just basically said, well, work it out. And I walked away because those changes need to happen so that we have a really cohesive, happy group.
Yeah. And it sounds like you do a lot of critical reflection within yourself. Is that something that you're quite comfortable with, like sitting with the discomfort?
I think it's taken a long time to really think about being critically reflective of everything that I do, and also of what my colleagues do as well, and my co-educators do. You have to be really careful how you might approach that with someone else because you're not always sure how they do their own critical reflection unless you've had a discussion. In fact, it was a conversation we were just having yesterday around how is it that we can record critical reflections that we are actually having. We want to be able to show that in our quip. We want to be able to show that if we have an assessment and rating visit. We want to be able to show that we are thinking about what's working, what's not working, how we might change things, how we can do things better. And you need to be able to record that in some way so that they can see that you're taking the steps that you need to take to change things so that it works appropriately.
Yeah, most definitely. And it's ongoing. It should
It
happen.
is ongoing.
Yeah. And often I say it doesn't mean that you've reflected in this aspect that you don't go back to it. Revisiting that reflection is also quite powerful as well. Yeah. And so for yourself, how do you find your pedagogical practices, you know, that teaching style? How did that progress and how did that come about for you?
It's definitely evolved over time. I feel like it changes every year. So, and often it's the cohort of children that you're working with that help to set what your practices might be for that particular year. I know that I have some pretty good sort of routines and transitions that I have in place that I know we need to work through as a group as the year progresses. And that's my base, I suppose. But everything else is open for interpretation. Until you know the children that you're working with and the cohort that you're working with, what the expectations of the families are, what it is that they need to learn, what age they are, all those sorts of things, it's really hard to know what it is that you're going to be doing with those children as the year progresses and what the expectations might be for yourself and for your co-educators to get the best that you can out of the children that you're actually working with.
Yeah.
So it's forever evolving, forever evolving.
And what you've highlighted is so important that, you know, it changes every year. It looks completely different every year. And, you know, often when I tell my student that, you know, you come out from whatever course that, you know, you have done, it doesn't mean that you've got this image or this idea of what a teacher you are. It changes every single year. And that shows that you're open to change and you're open to new possibilities.
Very
And,
much so.
yeah. And it's so important. Yeah. And we expect children, we see children changes every year and evolve. And we should evolve as well. Let's talk a little bit about leadership. What does that mean for you, being a leader?
I'd like to think that I'm a positive influence on my colleagues' teaching practice, their life, really. I don't know if I am, but I feel like I probably am. It's nice. I do get some nice feedback from some people that I work with, and they do say, and often I seem to be the sounding board that they're looking for. So they've got something that they need to talk about. They want to sit down and chat to me about that. And that's a really nice space to be in. It's taken me a while to get to this space, I think. I was lucky that I was able to do some of the mentoring courses just before COVID came along. And last year was my first opportunity of doing some mentoring of provisionally registered teachers. So I had two last year. Two. I can't remember how many I had. I had two last year. And it was a really exciting time of being able to hear what they've learned, what it is that they wanted to focus on, how it was that I could support them. It really opened lots of doors to how I teach. When I was observing that, oh, I might try that. That seems like a really good idea. And I was able to take ideas back and think about that. And then when we sat down on that panel and listened to all the work that they had worked on throughout their time of moving from provisional to full registration, I was really proud of the work that they had put in and that I was able to contribute towards that. I am a leader in the space that I work in now, and I work in a very interesting space where it's not just us, but there's some others in the building that we're in. And my experience, I think, comes through in the conversations that I have, not just with my direct colleagues, but with other colleagues in the space that I'm in. So I embrace that. I really like being able to do that mentoring and be able to spend time being a leader in that space. And I can only see that hopefully continue to grow as time goes.
Yeah, most definitely. And I've also mentored for the VIT registration, and I think it's just so important and such an interesting journey for ourselves as a teacher. And I completely advocate for our well-experienced teachers to actually do that, because not only you are able to give back to the sector, but also you'll be able to grow and learn from others as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, most definitely. And in terms of self-care, what do you do to look after yourself?
I leave on time. And
Salt
the funny
and
thing is,
water.
I was doing that today. I'm fortunate that I've got a couple of days where I finish a little bit earlier in the day. And I was just talking to my co-educators before we're leaving, going, the most important thing that I do is that I always leave on time. I don't stay back to do work. Yes, I might come in a little bit earlier in the morning so I can get a handful of things done before my other educators arrive, but I always leave on time. And that's really important that I do that. Something that I've done this week, which I haven't done for a very long time, is I haven't brought the work computer home. So I'm not coming home and doing work, even though I probably need to. I'm not coming home and actually doing any work. And I've been able to switch off when I get home so that I can relax and be ready for the next day when the next day comes along. They're the two major ones. For the first time in a really long time over these past school holidays, I managed to read 9 books. And I haven't done that for so long. And I love reading. And it's something that I don't do often enough. And I had such a huge pile of to-be-reads. I thought, right, that's it. I need to start reading it. And I loved my downtime of being able to escape into a really good novel, and spend some time reading. And so that's something that I really look forward to doing. I balance that out with time with my family, of course. I love doing craft, so I've got all sorts of craft projects that I might be working on. I find other things to do away from work that help me to unwind and to turn off, and so that I'm fresh and ready to go when I do go back.
Yeah, oh, it's so important, isn't it, to be able to detach? Yeah, but it can be quite a challenge to detach, especially when you're there at work and you'll get pulled in different direction, and you're already clocked off. What would be your advice for people who actually find it a challenge? And it can be quite overwhelming. You're there, you give it all when you're on the floor with the children and with the team, but for someone who really, really needs to be able to shut down and leave. And it can be quite difficult. How do you navigate all of that?
The funny thing is, it happens that something happened to you and you didn't happen to go to work the following day or you needed to take time off. There is always someone that can pick up and do your job. And that in a nutshell says to me, whilst you might think you're indispensable, actually you're not. There is always someone that can pick up and do the work that you're doing. Yes, it might take them a little while to navigate through whatever it was that you're working on to work out where you're up to. But guaranteed, whilst you think that all those people are sitting there waiting for you to get that job done or to do whatever it is that needs to happen, if something was to happen to you and you happen to not be there, someone else will always be able to pick up and do what you haven't done. And that sounds really harsh, but it's true. It really is. I had a period of time, not last year, the year before, I had to have some surgery, and I had 7 weeks, I ended up having 9 weeks actually, 9 weeks off work. And I did all the preparation in the world that I could in before I left to make sure everything was the way it was needed to be. And yeah, I got a couple of phone calls in the first couple of weeks, just sorting out, ironing out a few little things, and that was easy. But then after that, I could sit back and I could recover because I knew that there were people there that would just pick up and do what needed to be done. You're going home and you're really worried about something that perhaps you didn't get finished, then finish it. So if you think you just need to spend half an hour working on that at home so that you get yourself in a better headspace and go, okay, that's as much as I can do for now, and it puts you in a better space for when you next return to work, then get it done. But don't spend all hours of the day and night doing all this work because it's not really going to be appreciated by the people you think should appreciate it because they've got their own things to be thinking about and their own work to get through. So yeah, it sounds harsh, but that's the reality. And I learned that the hard way, I have to say,
I
because
was
I
gonna say exactly the same thing. I actually learned the hard way as well, and I truly believe that. Yeah, and also it does say a lot about your style of leadership. It's a leader who's able to let go. You have systems and practices in place where you enable other people around you to be able to step into your role, and that does say a lot about your leadership as well, doesn't it? Yeah. So you've been here in the sector for 33 years now. How do you stay motivated and inspired?
The children keep me motivated and inspired, definitely. We have different children that come through every single year, and I love being able to spend time with them, teaching them, watching them grow, watching them change from being those really quiet, for some children, very quiet and shy in the beginning year, not all, but certainly quiet and shy. And the breakthroughs that I have with those children as the year progresses, and we get the last few weeks of kinder, and they're so ready for school, and we can see all the hard work that we've put in throughout the year has got them prepared to be able to head off to where they're going. I think when you truly love this job, and when you truly love teaching children and seeing the impact that you have on young children's lives, the motivation's there. Yeah, after such a long time. Having said that, though, I'm happy to stop teaching and move on to other things. I don't see myself ever being out of this sector, though. And I've been really fortunate through the time, like I mentioned earlier, being able to do some different roles throughout the time. So when I got to a bit of a stalemate in my teaching journey, I thought, right, what else can I do? And I went off and I worked as a preschool field officer for 7 years. Then I went, oh, actually, maybe I'll come back to teaching. And I came back and started teaching again. And I've been fortunate in the current role that I've been in that I was able to pick up some preschool foot officer work for a year. So that just gave me that little bit of break of being out of the classroom and being able to do something a bit different and then step back in to do teaching again as well. Definitely, definitely the children keep me motivated for sure.
Yep. And when you're feeling, lost or I guess questioning your practices, what do you do in those circumstances?
I have a mentor. I might be a mentor to others, but I also have my own mentor, and that's really important. I have a person that I can sound off with. Sometimes I just go in there and say, I need to dump. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, I feel better now. can you help me sort out this and this? Yep, great. All right, now off I go, and I'll go off again. So important to find someone that you might work with, whether it be a colleague, whether it's someone that doesn't even work in the industry, but that you trust. And that you can tell them everything that you need to tell them, and you know that you're going to get good advice, or sometimes you're going to get them sitting there going, I'm just going to listen. That's what I'm going to do. And you start to do the problem solving and thinking yourself during that conversation. Having one person, two people, five people, whatever, however many you need, when you can find that person, then you've got someone that you can actually talk to when you need. And I find that's really important.
And for someone who's new into the sector, where can they find mentors?
Look in your workplace as a starting point. We're really fortunate that we're in a cluster. So sometimes going to our cluster meetings, you might meet some educators, fellow educators in services working around you that you might find that you click with and you start to chat to. And you might be able to say, do you think we can have some conversations at different times to talk through how we're feeling about things, or we're not sure how to do this or how this works. There are lots of different ways of finding mentors. It might be that you go back to the university where you trained and say, is there someone that I can speak to through university that I might be able to use as a mentor? When you are in that space, if you're a teacher where you're moving from being provisionally registered to full registration, you might find a mentor through that way, and it might be someone that you connect with, and you can keep talking to that person as time goes on. There's different ways of finding them. You've just got to work at it. And hopefully you find that person that you can speak to. I have a colleague that I work with who is under me, but she's actually really good at being a mentor in a different way. So when I had some decisions that I had to make last year, I started saying some stuff to her. And rather than going, yeah, great, you should do that, she came back with questions. Have you really thought this through? Have you thought about this choice? Have you done this? Have you spoken to this person? Challenged me in a different way, but I classify her as being a mentor for me as well because I know she's a good sounding board and she's not doing it to benefit herself because the outcome is going to work out good in her favour, but making sure that I was thinking through every possibility before I made that final decision.
Yeah, definitely great advice. Yeah. And it can be quite an isolating sector that we're in as well. So it's really important to find
Sure.
someone that, speaks your language, understands you on the same pedagogical mindset. Yeah, they're just really, really important. Yeah. And I guess what's the next journey for you? What's your next focus in your professional journey?
That's a really good question. I'm not actually sure what that's going to be. There are certainly going to be some changes in my professional life over the next 12 months. And I'm already starting to think about where I might move on from this space that I'm currently in. I don't know exactly what that's going to be. I do like to think that I might be in that mentoring or leading position of some description. But I'm just starting to explore and find out what else there is out there in the early childhood sector that I might be able to move on to, or whether I might be in a space where I continue teaching but take on a slightly different role than what I'm doing in my teaching at the moment. And there could be some possibilities of that. So it's a watch this space, I suppose, as I continue to think through what my next steps might actually be.
Yeah, how exciting. I cannot
It
wait.
is very exciting. Yes, very much so.
And what's your vision for early child sector? And I usually, magnify it in a way that if you're a prime minister of Australia, what would you do for the early child sector?
Give us more money. I bet everyone says that. It would be so wonderful to be compensated for the work that we actually do. But that's a big thing, I think. I feel like the Victorian government's probably moving in the right direction. They're not quite there, but they are moving in the right direction to be able to support that. I feel like our hands are tied so much with the amount of paperwork and all that other stuff that we have to do as part of our role. And I'd love to be able to see some changes happen in that space to make life a little bit easier for us to actually teach the children and do what it is that we're qualified to do. I don't know how they're going to achieve that, to be honest with you. I feel like our hands are tied with so much red tape. Applying for funding and all the things that we have to do takes up so much time. And I really don't know how you can change that. I would like to think they would start to trust as professionals to be able to go, this is what we actually need. Can you trust us in this? And if we provide the right information, make life a little bit easier for us when it comes to applying for some of those sorts of things. One would hope that that might happen at some point. It'd be nice to think that our ratios were just a little bit different. But you know what? When you're working in the 3 to 5 year old age group, which is what I do, 1 to 11 is not so bad. I remember the days when it was 1 to 15. The 1 to 11 is not so bad. But you know, when I think about these 3 year olds that I've got at the moment, and some of them are very young, we need an extra person. There's only two of us, and we need an extra person. So sometimes a smaller ratio works really well for the cohort of children that you might actually be working.
Most definitely. Yeah, I completely agree with that. Let's finish off with one last question. What advice that you would tell your beginning teacher self, what would that be?
Think I said it earlier. Breathe. Take on every opportunity that is offered to you if you have the capacity to do so. Be open to any possibility that's given to you. I think that was something that I should have been thinking about a long time ago to make life easier as I've worked through all the different roles that I've been in. That be true to yourself, be compassionate, be able to take on challenges headfirst if you can. And that will help you as you continue to move through working in this particular field. I'm sure
That's
there's other things, but they're the main things I can think of.
But they're really important messages as well because, I think especially, taking on any opportunities, there's a lot of fear that comes with new things. Like you said, change can be a scary thing.
It can be.
And
It
it's really
always can.
hard to navigate all of that. But yeah, it's just trying new things and giving things a go.
Believing in yourself, that was the other one. So believe in yourself, believe in what you have learned, believe in the experiences that you're going to gain in the time that you're doing. Back yourself if you can. And that will work hopefully in your favor every time.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, Leanne, it's a privilege. You've given so many great advice today. And thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been really enjoyable chatting to you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Teaching Journey Podcast, Connecting Through Early Education. If you enjoyed this episode, we would love to hear your feedback or even reach out to us if you would like to share your teaching journey with us. Connect with us on Instagram by searching for Teaching Journey Podcast. For links of your guest speakers, resources and reflections mentioned in this episode, check out our show notes. We hope to have inspired you today to continue your journey of self-reflection and authenticity, contributing to the ripple effects of reform of early education. See you in the next episode!